Barriers to healthcare. We all see them. We all experience them every day. This is the United States. We don't have single payer. There's walls everywhere. According to the Department of Defense, the number of wounded since 2001 reached 50,010 as of 10/25. 16,000 of these were severely injured, 1,653 major limb amputations, and the DOD has diagnosed 43,000 cases of TBI. It's huge. PTSD, don't even go there. This presentation concentrates on the disparities and barriers to care for veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, but we can't forget the veterans of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam who still exist and who still need services under the VA or TRICARE or the military health care. Since September of 2001, there have been 711,000, almost 712,000 VA patients treated. You can see the statistics. They're huge. The mental health burden is enormous. There are going to be almost a million new veteran claims by the end of 2013. And again, this includes veterans of all eras, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Of course, most of them will be from Iraq and Afghanistan. Some of the problems include the big coverage differences. Active duty regular troops are covered under military health care and have family benefits. Vets who were regular troops will have VA coverage for service-connected pathology and for some of the rest of their health care. Guard troops on active duty obtain care where they're stationed, and when they're not on active duty, they have 180 days of TRICARE coverage with the option to purchase more. With what money, I don't know, but after, of course, this is the next thing. Iraq and Afghan Veterans of America reports in from their recent survey that their members' unemployment rate was almost 17%, significantly higher than the 12.1% average unemployment rate for Iraq and Afghanistan era veterans, and that is really too high. Almost half of the unemployed members do not feel that employers were open to hiring veterans. On the Daily Show this week, they had a couple of veterans who were talking about, a couple of veterans who were in healthcare, veterans who had been combat medics, who were having the devil's own time changing their combat medic status into a meaningful civilian job. There is no overlap. These are people who are so overqualified to be paramedics, it's silly, but they can only qualify as EMTB and have to go back and retake all of paramedic training in order to get a job, and that is one tiny example of some of the problems with veterans obtaining jobs, which would give them access to health care after that 180 days. I love this graphic. It is so evocative of PTSD and traumatic brain injury. This says it for me. Using the DSM-IV measure of PTSD, PTSD among members of the National Guard increased hugely, 5.7%, compared to 1.2% for soldiers in regular military, in the regular military. It's almost five times as great. The researchers that did this study, which is Dr. Jeffrey Thomas out of Walter Reed, stated that the reason seemed to be the differences in care. Again, barriers to care mean something. And this cartoon has been in existence since 2008, and it hasn't changed. We need to take care of our veterans. Some of the institutional problems with the VA. The VA secretary himself stated that things are getting better. The inventory of pending claims is only 880,000, and claims older than 125 days are only 580,000. This means that people who come home from the war, who are wounded, who have PTSD, who have traumatic brain injuries, who have amputations, who have gunshot wounds that need to be dealt with, may wait more than 125 days to receive coverage that would allow them to get the care. I mean, let's be very clear about this huge hole that they're in. The California Center for Investigative Reporting has found that in more densely populated areas, wait times for VA services are increasing. In LA, the average is 377 days. In New York City, 373 days. In Waco, Texas, 413 days. It's probably a little quicker in North Dakota. The geographic disparities are huge. You can look at this slide later. The reasons for the variations are huge, but some of the reasons for the variations in care are that some places take PTSD more seriously than other places. It's a matter of training, it's a matter of experience, and it's a matter of getting people on board with the big ticket disabilities such as PTSD. There are medical centers that are rewarding people for not diagnosing PTSD. There are VA offices that do that. It's not specific on paper, but 15 interviews later and 14 of them said, sure, you know, we're encouraged by days off and other perks, not to just say it. Okay, another big, huge barrier of care comes from the veterans themselves, and this is something that those of us who do clinical medicine need to know that. Surveys show that 100% of combat troops report knowing colleagues who did not seek care for physical or mental illnesses in the combat zone. If you can find a combat troop that doesn't know somebody like this, call me. I need to put it in my statistics. Okay? My own research, all the respondents reported that the reasons for not seeking care in a combat zone included the need to man up. Even my female respondents included the need to man up. The veterans who do not seek care also, who hadn't sought care in the combat zone, also tend not to seek care on the home front. The VVAW members that I work with mostly call this stupid veteran syndrome because a lot of the Vietnam veterans have said, oh no, I'm fine, really. Other people need more care than I do. The guys coming back now need the care. What they don't realize is if they don't get on the VA rolls, then the VA doesn't have as many people on the rolls and they don't get as much funding. So the best benefit they can give to other veterans is to enroll. The VA is a pain in the ass to work with. Oh boy, are they ever. the bureaucracy is huge. Steve's work pointed it out in the military. The VA, depending on where you are, can be horrific. And they can't help me. The sense that the VA is not a place where real help is available. What do we need to do? Institutionally, it's crucial that the Department of Defense and the VA share resources and bridge the gap in transition. When people are transitioning out of active duty, whether they be National Guard or regular Army or regular Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, there are transition units. There are transition, different than what Steve was talking about, but there are transition interviews. There are places where people can sign up for the insurance. There is help available on paper. But geographically, it's very, very different from one area to another. And a big barrier here is that guys are trying to get out. They're trying to go hug their family. They're trying to decide to get out of this horror. They want to go home. And so they leave before they go through all of the little spaces that they're supposed to do. And then 2 weeks later, there's nothing for them. If they don't do it right when they're getting out, they have to climb this huge hill of bureaucracy to get back to the process. So the Department of Defense has to do a much better job. We need to have equal benefits for all of our combat troops. People who serve in the Guard who go into combat should have exactly the same benefits as people who are veterans of the regular services. I think it's really critical. And we need to create a culture of support for troops and veterans seeking care. We need to make getting care sexy. We need to get these guys to have a culture where getting care is the thing to do. It's what the man up thing to do. It's the right thing to do. It's the brave thing to do. I have very few resources listed, but lots of websites for you. My disclosure is that nobody pays me nothing. I am a board member in Vietnam Vets Against the War, and proudly for the last 45 years have worked with them and have worked in anti-war and peace efforts for the same amount of time.